Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with someone you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One-on-One, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
Baseball is the reason why I met my wife. Baseball is the reason why I'm the only reason why I ended up coming to Philly. So to go back and say I'm just going to do a regular job, because I did all those other jobs. I delivered phone books back in the day when they had phone books. I did parking enforcement at Texas A&M Corpus Christi. I did the grounds crew at Corpus Christi Hooks. I did oddball stuff, but it was always just to coach.
And our guest this week is Pat Horvath. He is the head baseball coach at Division II Thomas Jefferson University in East Falls. His squad coming off an appearance in the Division II NCAA tournament this past year, first one since 1990. And Pat, thanks so much for coming in studio.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Matt.
So mention how successful this last season was. You guys had been knocking on the door of having success like this, and you finally busted through this year. Right. How satisfying was it to reach the heights that you reached?
Oh, it's very satisfying. Like you said, we were knocking on the door. I think it's kind of started 2016 was like the turning point of the program since I've been there, building, always getting to that Final Four conference tournament. And then 2021, 2022, 2023 are having successful seasons, but we just couldn't get over that hump. And then finally this year, it just kind of all clicked. And it's like, wow, we look back and all right, we got 33 wins, and we went to regionals, and we won a game, and it's the first time since 1990. So it's very satisfying, but then also a little bit not, because we know, hey, we could have maybe done a little bit more. If we got that hit, that one inning against Southern New Hampshire, maybe we could have won another game. We didn't walk away with the CACC championship either. It was good. We're regionally ranked, but not getting the CACC championship, which hasn't been done in program history, is the one step. But then, hey, we got to that point where we got to regionals. Now 30 wins plus wins, and hopefully we can use that and as a jumping board on to the next season and the season after that.
I think it speaks incredibly highly of the program that you didn't get an automatic bid, and it had been a long time, right, but your resume was so strong that you got that get in at right. large.
Yeah, and then that helped by playing Southern New Hampshire early in the year at Jefferson. We played Franklin Pierce. It helped that our conference was really strong, too. We had Post University, who was regionally ranked. They went. Goldie Beacom was regionally ranked. So that helped our conference as well. And it just, we were number two at one point, and then we didn't pull it off at the conference tournament. We lost, so we dropped down to number four. So we had an opportunity. If we won out, we could have hosted, had an opportunity to host the first regional there, too.
When during this season did you feel kind of in your gut that it was going to be different? Like, was there a game or a moment where maybe you won a game that in years past you would have lost, or a situation where somebody came through that they had struggled to, like, was there something where you started to feel as a coach like this, it's a little different?
Yeah. And I think you have those every year. For this year, it was kind of the same story. Hey, we win a couple games, lose a couple here. We're not performing up to our standards. We know we could be better. And then all of a sudden it was, we played Goldie Beacom, got beat by at home. Then we played Dominican. I switched everything up. I changed up the lineup. I took guys out. And then that kind of like resonated with the team, like, all right, hey, we got to change things up. After we did that, that's when we kind of started taking off. The lineup switched. The 1-6 hitters were different from previous games. And that kind of got our offensive rolling. And then the team started coming together a little bit more. And that was against Dominican. And then after Dominican came like Chestnut Hill series and stuff like that. And then the biggest moment was actually at the end of the season where I'm like, oh, all right, we got, this is actually working, was against Bridgeport. This is the first game of the doubleheader up there. We're losing 2-1 late in the game. Second and third, two outs, pinch hit. And if we lost to Bridgeport, we'd still make the playoffs. But we're looking at, hey, we're trying to get 30 wins. We're trying to get regionally ranked. That would have dropped us down pretty good. Hit a ground ball to second base. I'm like, oh, here we go. And the guy kicked it around. We're safe at first. Tying run scores. Guy in second. Hustles all the way home. Then that eventually was the winning run. I'm like, oh, all right. So the ball bounced our way. We get some breaks. And that's kind of like where it's like, oh, this, hey, we got it going. And then we kind of go into the tournament and everything else. So
with having a breakthrough season like this, now pivoting ahead, does life change for the program as far as you are now a squad? As you said, you've been building, but I think it's different when you get in, you win a game in a regional. Everybody's going to know when you're on the schedule. You're not going to sneak up on anybody. You're going to be circled now. Like, is that a conversation you have with the players that, hey, we can't take anything for granted. We're going to get everybody's best, stuff like that. Is that something you have to address, or is it understood?
No, you have to address it. And I learned that from 2016 when we made the playoffs, made the championship. We were in the championship final, and we didn't win that one. And that came out of nowhere. That was, 2016. The next year, everybody's, oh, we're going to be good. We're going to be good. We lost one guy. It was a key guy. Fernando Garza is an All-American. But the whole year, they're like, oh, we're going to be good. We're going to be good. And then they don't succeed. And so when you have a successful season like this, the first mindset is the rest. Oh, we're good. We got all these guys coming back. We're good. So it has to be addressed. It has to be understood that winning is hard. And then to do what we did was really, really hard. And we have to work even harder to get to that 30-win-plus plateau. Then you add on top of what you mentioned of everybody kind of knew us anyways. Like, we were a tough team. We had all these hitters. We had Jim Cisco as a pitcher. They knew us. Now it's like, oh, these guys went to a regional. Now we're a little bit more regionally known. And then they're going to come after us a little bit more. So the whole idea is to get into these guys, understand that last year's last year. It was success. It was great for the program. The guys that did it, great. But now it all starts over. Everybody's starting over from zero, and we got to put in the work in the fall, and then we got to work on our team chemistry and everything else, and then we got to play the games. Because the games, you can have a bad game, but then how do you respond to it to the second game? You can't have two bad games in a row. And then knowing that everybody's going to be trying to throw their best guy at us, because it's now we are Jefferson. It's like back, Wilmington's always Wilmington for us. Goldie Beacom's always an offensive power. So it's like, oh, we're going to face Goldie Beacom. They're going to hit. So, and that's where we're going to be at now. And they have to understand they have to put in the work. It's going to be hard again. It's just not given.
Does this success change how you approach scheduling? Like, do you look to add things, or now that, like you said, the conference is at a good level, do you maybe back off on some things in the non-conference because you're going to get those tests in the conference, or do you just kind of approach it the way you always have?
I think start approaching it the way we always have. We used to, like, when I first started, it was like, oh, play Westchester and East Strasburg, and we just weren't at that level. Now it's like, hey, we do have Millersville on our schedule. We are going to play Westchester again. We are going to play Franklin Pierce again, because those are regionally ranked teams, and when you play them, one, it's helping in your regional ranking, but also it's a test for yourself. Like, we found out so much about our team and what we need to work on when we played Southern New Hampshire at our place, when we played Franklin Pierce at our place, because those guys are at the level that we want to get to. And it's not just athletically, or it's like, what's the coaches doing? What are they doing differently? How are they utilizing a bunt in a situation? And you learn from that, and it's a test for the team. Then you go into the conference. Now it's like you're battle tested. And our conference is good, but it's from top to bottom, it's not that solid yet. So it's good, like, hey, Goldie Beacom, Wilmington's always going to be a battle. Post, Felician's always going to be a battle. But then you start going to the other teams. It's like, hey, Holy Family's brand new program. You still got to be able to go and play them because they're going to be tough. But they're not that time tested as a Wilmington or a Felician. So having a tougher schedule helps with that, and then it helps regionally ranking. Like, if we didn't have the schedule that we had, playing Southern New Hampshire and winning a game, Franklin Pierce and winning games and doing that, then our regional ranking, we probably wouldn't have been set up to get at large.
So you talk about 2016 being kind of a pivot point for the program. I feel like from the outside, like 2021 coming out of the pandemic was kind of another one where you reached again. Do you agree? And kind of dig into those two spots. Like, what changed that kind of raised the level of everything in both situations?
Yeah. So 2016, I started in 2011 was our first season. And then we got to the playoffs 2013. And you're just kind of going through it. You're trying to figure out what can you do as a program in the situation that we're at with, like, the school and academics and practices and getting players in that want to, like, compete and win. And 2016 was the fall. 2015 was a rough fall for the program. We had a lot of things going on, so you didn't know what 2016 was going to be. We start the season. We're kind of back and forth. Next thing you know, it just clicks. We play Dominican up at Rockland Boulder Stadium. We have this guy, Brandon Caranto, who's the all-time career home run leader at our place, hits two balls out of the stadium in back-to-back games there, the win, and that kind of propelled us. And then we got to the playoffs, or we had to go to the end of the year, and we're playing Concordia, and both teams had to win a game to get into the playoffs. So here we are. Our mindset in 2016 and any time before that was to make playoffs. That was the borderline, hey, let's just make playoffs. And then we got to Concordia the last two games of the season. Each team had to win at least one to make the playoffs. We're winning the first game. We hit back-to-back-to-back home runs. And we're like, yeah, we're going to make it. Boom. Next thing you know, they tie it. And it's like ninth inning. They tie the game. Now we're going to extras. I'm sitting here about to throw up because I'm like, if we lose this game, I know they have this kid named Lawrence who was a dominant pitcher at the time. And if we lose this when we're up so big, morale's going to be bad. We're going to lose another one. We ain't making playoffs. The season's going to be over. So we ended up chipping our way back. We got a big base hit from Treggs, who was a senior. We win that game. All right, we're in. Now we're playing for home field advantage. All right, and they're facing their number one now. And it was a 2-1 ball game, ninth inning. We're up, man on first, one out. Mike Melendez hits a ground ball, beats out the double play. Two outs, man on first, down by one. I'm like, oh, all right, at least we made the playoffs. It's fine. Then Stephen Wells, who eventually the following year was an All-American, hits a two-run home run. Bam, now we're a home field advantage, which changes everything, especially playing at our field. And then we go in, and we're playing NIAC. And I remember that day good because it rained, and then all the coaches were working on the field trying to get it playable, playable, playable. We had the players to stay away, go eat. Got the game in, we won 2-1. That was the most fulfilling part of even now. Was winning that game, getting to the Final Four. Because of all the stuff that the program went through from the time I started and stuff, that was like the most fulfilling moment when we won that game. We went to the Final Four. Then we went to the Final Four, and then, hey, we beat Felician, who was a nationally ranked team at the time. Now we beat Dominican. Oh, my gosh, now we're into the championship game, and we had to win one game, but we just ran out of pitching. So that was like the one turning point of like, boom. But then, like I mentioned before, you had success, and everybody thinks it's going to be easy again. Even myself, we thought, oh, it's just going to come. We got it. But we're missing all those little parts of, like, the culture and the mentality and what it takes to get back to that point. So then we get into the pandemic, and we come back out. Now, we're like, cool, we're out here playing baseball. Let's enjoy it. And we're fortunate enough to have a fall. Like, we're able to get 8 hours in practice. And the beautiful thing about that was these guys were all remote. They all stayed together because they didn't want to go out and do stuff to possibly shut down the program because of COVID. So they're all really, really, really close. And then we get going, and we went 3 out of 4 against Mansfield our first weekend that we started up. And then a player gets COVID, and we get shut down for 2 weeks. And they're like, I'm sitting here. I'm like, well, there goes our momentum. They're like, it is what it is. Hey, we're getting to play. Come back out. And we just rolled through it. And again, just like 2016 and 2021, those teams were really, really close. They were rooting for each other. They didn't care who was playing in front of them or what. They just wanted to win and have fun. And then 2021 was a great time where everybody's remote. They're all hanging out at the field. We ended up doing cookouts almost every day at practice because we had a grill out there. And then once practice was done, they're playing football. They're throwing the – they're hitting golf balls. They're just being guys. And then that ran us all the way through to the championship game that we were able to host. And I'm thinking, hey, this is it. This is the culmination that we're going to get it. It's at home. It's perfect. It's lined up. And baseball's tough. And Dominican came, made a couple good plays. I remember a relay that got us at third base. And we had this, again, second and third, two outs. Efron Santiago, one of our best hitters, was up, had opportunity, and just didn't get it done. And you walk away, you're disappointed. But then you look back, and it's like, all right, that was a fun year. Like, these guys love each other, the program. And then you got to transition 2022, 2023. So those were the big ones. And that the 2021 season propelled us to what we're doing now, because now we have a winning record. Like, we're over 500 for the first time. And that's the thing, too, since 2021 was the best record since, I think, 1991 or 1992. So we're always doing these firsts that from the 90s when I was 10 years old. And so it was helping propel it. Now it's like, hey, this is what it takes to get a winning record. All right, now you got to keep fighting. Now propel us to now. It's like, hey, now we got 30 wins. Now that's the goal. Like, what do we got to do to get there? Well, you can't lose those games that you should win. You got to be prepared every day. You're playing doubleheaders. It doesn't matter. And then now it's like, how do we get back to 30 wins? Because 30 wins will get you in that position of doing what you want to do, which is the NCAA regional, getting yourself in position to win a CSCC championship. And those two aspects really changed it. The 2016 propelled it to one a certain height, and then 2021 got us to a little bit higher. And then it's like, all right, now we got to the pinnacle, but what do we got to do to get over that? Meaning, how do we get the CSCC championship so we can hang it up on the wall with everybody else? It's only us in softball and I think golf at Jefferson that has not won a CSCC championship. And then how do we continue that success and get back to the NCAA regional?
So let's dig into your backstory. Mm-hmm. Were you baseball across the board as a kid, or were you doing a lot of different things?
I was baseball across the board. I grew up in Florida, right outside of Tampa. So it was baseball all the time. I was playing in the street baseball. I shot hoops and did some basketball out there, especially during Michael Jordan's Bulls era. I would watch him on Saturday and then go out and shoot hoops and be John Paxson, shoot three-pointers because I'm short. It's like no shot of ever dunking. But it was always baseball. And it was great because where I grew up, we had the spring training. So we had the Clearwater Phillies. We had the Dunedin Blue Jays. We had the Tampa Yankees. So when spring training came around, I got to see Darren Dalton. I saw Carlos Delgado. I saw all these guys. And it was always just baseball.
Were you a catcher?
A catcher. I was a catcher.
Like, even as a kid?
No, so it kind of transitioned. So I grew up, and then in Florida, we didn't have baseball at the time. So when I got home from school, always watched WGN, Chicago Cubs, Harry Carey. So I grew up with Ryan Sandberg, Sean Dunstan, Mark Grace. So I had Ryan Sandberg's glove. I was a second baseman, wore number 23. And then once I got a little bit older, 9, 10 years old, I got behind the plate. I'm like, yo, I'm in the game every pitch. This is great. Let me just do that. So then I transitioned to more of being a catcher from then, just fell in love with it.
What about being a catcher did you love?
The fact that you're in every play. Like, and I like the fact that you're in every play. You get to talk. I was talked a lot as a kid, so I was always talking. And being able, once I get a little bit older and you start throwing guys out and blocking the ball, and, you know, it was the tools of ignorance. And that was, like, always the main thing. It was like, hey, you're the captain on the field. You're seeing everything in front of you. So I just really fell in love with that aspect of the catching part.
What were your strengths as a player?
Strengths as a player was more of my mindset. I was more of like a bulldog mindset. I like to compete back there, and I'd be, all right, steal on me, I'll throw you out. I'd block the ball. I loved plays at the plate because back then you can kind of run into them a little bit, even in high school back then. So I love just, say, tagging a guy, dropping the ball in front of him. I was that guy. So that was my strength. I was more of a defensive guy. Offensively, yeah, I could hit and stuff, but it was more defense.
When did you realize that baseball was going to kind of be in your life for the duration? You played in college. You've coached for years. Hmm. Was there a moment where you kind of made the mental decision that the sport's going to be a big part of my life going forward? Because you majored in history, right?
Yeah, major.
A little different than...
Yeah, so I majored in history because I was going to be a history teacher in high school and be a baseball coach. So the plan was like, so I've always wanted to do something with baseball. And it was going to be like, I want to coach because I had a really good high school coach. And that really set it up. They're like, hey, I want to coach. And then instead of doing the PE route back in the day, I was like, yeah, I want to do history. Maybe it'd be cool. I'll show movies all the time. So I was starting on that route. And then once I graduated from Palm Beach Atlantic with a history degree, did some the testing to be a teacher, I started coaching at Palm Beach Atlantic. We had a new coach at the time. He gave me the opportunity to be the head JV coach, assistant coach when I was still finishing up school. And I really liked that aspect of the college part. And that's when I kind of got hooked. I was like, hey, I like college. And then I did a full-time sub at Santee High School down in West Palm when I was coaching. And I was in the high school every day, and I'm like, I don't know if I want to do this every day as a teacher, just to coach baseball. Like, college is cool. I just show up, I hit fungos, hang out, and it kept me in the game. You're staying young. So that was like the big part. I'm like, all right, I'm just going to do college. So I kind of set everything up in my path just to do that, where I'd made the sacrifices. I did the oddball jobs. I lived on an air mattress, on a couch, just to coach. And that's kind of like how my trail across the country and then ending up in Philadelphia kind of started, just because I knew I didn't want to do anything else except for coach college.
Did you ever waver on that? Because as you mentioned, you know, it's tough. A lot of it, sometimes it's volunteer. Sometimes you're getting a stipend that is very difficult to live on. Yeah. You've got to do odd jobs to make ends meet. Were there ever moments early in your career where you were like, I don't know, especially I'm sure you're seeing friends that you went to school with that are making nice money, you know, working 30, 40 hours, stuff like that.
No, it was crazy because my mom always was telling me like, yo, you got to get a job, become a teacher, give up on your dream, da, da, da. And I was like, yeah, I'm coaching. I love it. It's like, so I never had that about like, oh, this guy's making this money, because I could never see myself sitting behind a desk from 9 to 5. But then, you know, as life goes on, you get older and then you get married and you have kids. Now it's like, but then I'm like, yeah, but I'm already at the point of no return. I did all this to do what I'm doing now. How can I just stop doing what I'm doing and go behind the desk? And it's like, you can figure it out doing baseball. And baseball has opened up so many doors in my life. Baseball is the reason why I met my wife. Baseball is the reason why I ended up coming to Philly, because I met my wife kind of through baseball. So to go back and say, I'm just going to do a regular job, because I did all those other jobs. I delivered phone books back in the day when they had phone books. I did parking enforcement at Texas A&M Corpus Christi. I did the grounds crew at Corpus Christi Hooks when I was there. I did oddball stuff, but it was always just to coach. Like when I first moved up here and I was at Ryder in Philadelphia University at the time, I was working for Kraft Foods. I was stocking shelves of Oreos. I was getting like, oh, all right, we need to put Oreos, graham crackers. I'm doing that. And I'm like, the whole time, I'm like, all right, well, I got practice at 3. So I was doing that just and always thinking baseball.
We need to take a break on One-on-One. We will have more with Thomas Jefferson University head baseball coach Pat Horvath in just a moment. But right now, there's nothing quite like the Honda Accord Hybrid and the CR-V Hybrid when it comes to exhilarating efficiency. With hybrid technology and thrilling capability, these vehicles deliver an electrifying performance on every drive. Discover for yourself what truly makes these hybrids special. Redefine your driving experience with Honda. KBB.com's best value brand of 2023. Contact your local Honda dealer today about the Honda Accord Hybrid and the CR-V Hybrid. And now on One-on-One with Matt Leon, let's return to our conversation with Thomas Jefferson University head baseball coach Pat Horvath. Met your wife through baseball. How? Like, what's the baseball connection?
So I was out in San Diego coaching at San Diego Christian College in 2008. The ABCA Coaches Convention, which goes around all the time, happened to be in Philadelphia in 2008. I fly out, meet my friends from Florida, and the last night, my guys are like, hey, let's go out. Let's hang out. This is the last time we're going to see each other for a year. And I'm like, yeah, all right. So we go down to the field house on Market, and I'm hanging out. Early flight the next day. Next thing you know, a bunch of girls come in, and then the whole bar was full of baseball coaches, obviously, because of the convention. And we just happened to our two groups meshed and we hung out and that was it. Next thing you know, we're doing the long distance thing, doing emails back then because you had to pay for text messages and all that, roaming charges. And so that's how I met her. And if I wasn't a baseball coach and wasn't going to ABCA, who knows where I would have been right now, you know?
What would you say was the oddest job that you had? You mentioned some interesting things like delivering phone books and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Is there one that you kind of look back on and not necessarily shake your head, but like, man, I can't believe that was actually a thing for 6 months?
Yeah, I think it was more like the Kraft Foods. Like, it was because I'm like driving around. I went back to Florida for like a year. I started down there, transitioned up here. And it was like, why am I driving to stores and stocking shelves? And this was like before AirPods and, you know, you can play music on your phone. So you're like listening to the store music nonstop, the same stuff. And then you got, if you're in a Walmart and then you're wearing a blue polo, people think that you work at Walmart and asking you where things are. And it's like, that's like, all right, what am I doing here? You know, the parking enforcement at Texas A&M Corpus Christi was, I get that one because I was there on campus. That way I can go to the baseball office and be right there for practice. The full-time sub was interesting, but yeah, it's more like the Kraft Foods.
How much do you think that interesting background, those diverse types of jobs where you're probably not just doing things, but dealing with a lot of different types of people, how does that help you now as a coach? Because you probably have an appreciation for the grind and maybe what, you know, some kids are going through, stuff like that. Do you feel like it gives you kind of a unique perspective?
Yeah, I feel it does because I have experiences in all different parts of the country, which is obviously different. Like when I moved up here, it was like a culture shock. Northeast Philly, like Philly, like what's a Wawa, the snow, being stuck inside, and just all the different aspects. It allows me to have a better view on things instead of just being, like, my wife's from Feasterville. It's Feasterville. That's all she knows. And it's like, for me, it's like, I've been everywhere. I've been a lot of places, and it's being able to understand there's more than outside the bubble. I think a lot of people, and I think our players too, they get trapped thinking that this is the only world that there is, this little bubble that we're in. Say they're on Jefferson, right? That they're going to school, they're going to practice. There's nothing else in the world going on except for their little bubble. And they get caught up in that and not understanding, like, hey, there's other things going on out there and there's other people. And that was one of the things we used to do a lot of community engagement stuff with kids, because I wanted them to understand that there's other people that need help and they open their eyes a little bit to stuff. And then being able to relate to the kids with life experience. So the other thing is, like, I lost both my parents for different various reasons. So I've been through that. I've been through, you know, marriage issues with my parents. So I can relate to a lot of the kids that are struggling now with issues and problems. And for us as coaches, it's not necessarily baseball anymore. It's more outside baseball. Like, how are you managing classes and relationships and all this noise that's coming at you? And so we're really really dealing with that than more than just the baseball aspect. Like, we can fix your swing, that's easy, but what's the other stuff that's going on with you? Do we need to talk about it? Do we need help? And so that helps with my experience and the stuff that I've been through with my life, that I can hopefully relate and give you some insight and help these kids out.
When do you feel like, along all the stops, that you really hit your stride as a coach? And I don't mean from a win-loss standpoint, but like all the things you talked about,
right,
kind of understanding what the whole experience entailed and what you had to pay attention to. Like, was it prior to coming to Jefferson, or do you feel like it took a few years as the head coach here to really completely understand what the job needed?
It took a few years. So, yeah, I was – the Palm Beach Atlantic and all these places, and I coached with Barry Davis at Ryder and went to the regional, and even then I took over then Philly U, now Jefferson. I'm not the coach that I am now. Then I learned through it, and a lot of it had to do with the 2016 season. Again, a lot of stuff going on and finding out, you know what, if something's going to happen, I'm going to do it this way. I'm not going to listen to anybody else. I'm going to dive in and do it this way. And then every year you start growing as a coach and trying to tweak different things and finding out, all right, what needs to work. And again, what I've found is it's not the baseball part. Like, you can bring in 100 coaches. We all know our stuff. We all know how to run a practice. That's not the difference. It's how can you communicate with these guys? How can you get them all on board? For us, It's more the culture aspect. It's the program. Getting these guys to buy in that it's the program first, not about you, not about anything else. It's how can I make the program better? When I leave here, is the program better or worse, right? It's everything. Somebody brings something to the table. And so that's like the really big push on it. And then the baseball part helps too. No, being at where I've been for so long, I have an understanding of the class workload, which is where academic institution. I have an understanding of like, when can we use our field and when can't we use a field? I have an understanding, when can we use back Harris or the gyms when basketball season's going on? Because when we had Coach McGee and we got Coach Shirley, hey, gym's off limits, you know? So it's finding those out, which help. We do a lot of individual practices in between class schedules, but a lot of it is a lot of team meetings, a lot about, hey, having pride in the program. It's about the program. It's about the program. It's about the program. At the end of the day, it's about the program.
So 2010, you mentioned you come over. You're at Rider at this point as an assistant with Barry Davis. What's the connection that gets you the head coaching job? Like, what's the door that opens?
So the door that opens is Barry Davis' first wife, Rhonda Davis, was working at Phil U at the time as the fitness coordinator. And so Barry was already in the know on like how the coaching was going. That year, they had two coaches in 1 year, Mark Jackson, who left in the fall, went to Westchester, and then they hired the assistant coach. And at the end of the year, assistant coach, they got rid of. He wasn't doing a good job. And Barry's like, hey, it's open. All right. So we applied. So Rhonda kind of got my name probably to the top of the pile and then got in and did the interview process. So it was more of that connection of like how Barry Davis, you know, vouched for me as well. And then his wife was working at there, got me in there.
Now, you do athletic advancement.
I do.
At Jefferson as well. When did you take on that role? And how has, you talk about fundraising and stuff like that, because being, you know, doing the basketball games at Jefferson, I see you around and you're connected more than just the baseball coach.
Right.
I'm sure it adds to the workload, but does it help you get like the 360 appreciation for what's needed, not just for baseball, but for Thomas Jefferson athletics?
Yes, it does. And then real quick, before I was advancement, I was a coordinator of community engagement. And we started that job in 2015. And we built that up. And Jefferson Athletics was ranked in the nation for community service hours. And then I started advancement when Chris O'Brien, the crew coach, left. I think it was like 2 years ago. I went into Coach Shirley's office. Like, yo, I want advancement. I want his office. Mainly I wanted his office because it's in the basement. And it was great. So then now with the advancement part, I'm on fundraising Zoom calls. I'm with the Hall of Fame. I'm on the board of the Hall of Fame. I'm on the golf outing board. So, and it's trying to figure out ways of, and Rams Rise Up, which is our big fundraising every year, is finding ways of like, how can we get more alumni back involved? And that's kind of like my area that I'm trying to push in. And it's finding out we need so much and we just need help with it. It's the Rams Rise Up is just one part. The golf outing is another. And the advancement part is, for me, it's big on trying to get alumni back. And because of the name change, and that kind of pushed, you know, a split in it, but we have Textile to University, Phil U to Jefferson, is all these people that played sports there all had Rams across their chest. They all were Rams at one time. It doesn't matter what the color was and what the name was. You guys played there. So for baseball, since 1978, you played on alumni field. You were there. It doesn't matter if it was Textile, Philadelphia University, or Thomas Jefferson University now. And it's being able to, as advancement, is trying to get them back more involved so they can understand, like, let's help out. Let's help out the next generation of Rams, because in the end of the day, we are all Rams. You know, for me, I was part of the Philly U. Now I'm the Thomas Jefferson. It doesn't matter. I look at myself as I'm a Ram. I walk away, I'm a Ram. And that's the biggest thing. And so for advancement, for me, is going in there and trying to bring a little bit more life out, like thinking outside the box. Like, how can we get more funding for athletics? But then also in the meantime, how do we get back our relationship with all the alumni that we haven't really hit or we lost because of the merger and the name change? And how do we keep building so athletics as a whole can build? Because Jefferson University's athletics can be so good, and all it needs is some help from certain areas, and we can build this thing into a powerhouse in the area.
Favorite part of what you do?
Favorite part of what I do is the in-season coaching. Especially when things are going well, right? I like fall. I like the fall. I like the season of fall because the weather changes and stuff, and it's fun. You get to know the guys. Then when the season starts and you kind of get in the moment, I like that part, and it's just a blur. You start in the February, and next thing you know, you blink, and it's over, and you take a deep breath, and it's like, ah, it's summer. But the one time I don't like is the winter because we're stuck inside for 6 weeks, and that's the most awful stuff. It gets monotonous, it's tough. And I think that kind of like the Northeast kids are tougher than most kids. Real quick, when I took over here, I had a bunch of people in Florida telling me, like, oh, you can go get the third-tier Florida kid to come up here. I'm like, okay, yeah, they'll be all – like, they don't understand that the kids that up here are just as good as down in Florida and Texas, California. And the difference is they're tougher up here because they're used to being inside for 6 weeks. They're used to playing in 40-degree – I don't think I took my hoodie off maybe five times this year. I mean, it was cold all spring. And so that's a different mindset that you get with the Northeast kids, like the New York, the Jersey, the Philadelphia kids, than you do from the Florida and those guys. So
that was kind of leading to my next question, because I have so much respect for baseball coaches in this area that thrive, because I don't think the average person appreciates how you are fighting with one arm tied behind your back simply because, like you said, of the weather. Like, you've got to go south maybe to start your season and play 12 straight on the road. Mm-hmm. Just because it's warm, then maybe you start 3-9, but it's a good 3-9 because you haven't been home in 6 weeks, stuff like that. Especially as someone who is coming from the other end, where you had the advantage of being able to be outside whenever you want. You know, how long did it take you to really appreciate what it took to kind of weather the storm, no pun intended, of the early season as a Northeast baseball team, you know, when it's kind of stacked against you because you don't know when you're going to be inside, outside, where you're going to practice, stuff like that?
No, I mean, it is tough. And then, like, you're playing games, and it's like you're outside all day in 45-degree weather, even at home. And it's, but then, like, the whole thing is, like, all right, you go down south to play games, and, all right, well, that costs money. So now we have to fundraise for money. And then now you go down there. And then I think it was 2014. We went down to Florida. We flew. We got a charter bus. We played Palm Beach Atlantic, Nova Southeastern. It was great. Boom. All right, start of the season. Now we'll roll. Well, when we left Florida, a snowstorm was coming in. When we got back, there's 6 inches of snow. Well, we didn't play for 3 weeks. We couldn't go out on our field for three. So that whole, hey, fundraising, going down to Florida, all that stuff's great. Now you're starting back over, being inside, trying to hit a baseball inside, throwing inside. So it's tough. And the going down south and starting 3-9, like you said, was like the norm up for us. Like, okay, we went down and, hey, we played games, you're 3-9. Yeah, but you're 3-9. Like, but then you go watch like East Strasburg and Millersville. It's like, well, they're inside too. So what are they doing different? And I think it's more of a mindset a little bit too. It's like, how are they preparing for the start of the season? So for us, that was like a shift for us, is we started tinkering with how can we get these guys prepared to play outside when we do play outside? Because our field, they put a growth tarps on our field. We don't get on our field until March 1st. It could be 60 degrees out all February. Those things aren't coming off until March 1st. So we can't go out on our field. So we use a parking lot. We try to go outside in front of Ronson, Raven Hill area, then throw. We've been also lucky that we've had a place that we go outside and play on a turf field. That's helped. And then just also the mindset when we're practicing inside. So like going live, seeing pitchers, having more of an approach offensively. And we started out hot this year. We started our first game, I think we stole 12 bases. And, you know, we had Jim Cisco throwing about 97 that day too. But every year we're getting a little bit better, that we're playing better to start the season. Because that's a big part. As a coach too, we all know that. It's like, great, yeah, we went down to Florida and we come back 3-9. But as a player, you're 3-9, right? Then now how does your mindset change of, okay, well, they're like – for us, for instance, and that's a good point you brought up, that changed with us too, is because before it was like, oh, we're 3-9. It's all right. They're non-conference games. It doesn't matter. Just conference games matter. Yeah, but they all matter, right? We're trying to get the 30 wins. That all matters. So it's changing that mindset of like every game does matter. It's just not a trip to Florida or North Carolina and it's like, oh, we're getting our work. No, those matter. Like, we got to be ready. So somehow, some way, being prepared, if it's like changing up how we hit, our pitchers throwing more live, going outside when it's 35 degrees out and throwing in the back parking lot behind Raven Hill Field, whatever it is, we have to be ready mentally and physically to play outside down south.
Do you have a favorite part of game day? Like the routine? Mm-hmm. Is there one part, like maybe right before first pitch or coming into that last half inning when you've got a lead? You know, is there just a favorite part of game day?
Yeah, the last half inning when you got a lead, you're going, oh my gosh, please strike him out, Pilari. And don't screw anything up. No, I think it's like the BP. For like this year, it was BP. I threw BP every game, every practice. And I, you know, we play the music, and I switched it up on them this year. We were played Beethoven. And so Beethoven, and they, at first, they're like, oh my God, man. I'm like, listen, hitting is slow and rhythmic and class, and you're focusing in. This is like the teaching part of you, right? So I'm like, we're doing it. And then next thing you know, we come out and we're hitting hot first game. So then we just kept doing it. And even at when we went up to regionals, and we had that hour practice, they asked me what music you want to put on. I'm like, Beethoven. And they looked at me like I had four heads. I was like, no, put Beethoven on. So I had Beethoven on. And even when we were hitting in the gym at Southern New Hampshire because we couldn't hit on the field, we had a little speaker and we were playing Beethoven. And that's like the best part because it's the calm before the storm, because that's a controllable thing for me where I can control, hey, let's work on this, let's do this. Once the game starts, you really can't control what's going on. The pitch is thrown, it's happening, and you're just hoping that, hey, this guy learned how to do the delay steal or ball in the dirt read, or we field this ball here. So it's probably BP is the best, and then it goes.
And my final question, what do you hope people take away from Thomas Jefferson University of Baseball? Like, if you wanted somebody to really get the essence of what you hope the program is, what is it?
Well, I hope they come in and it's a family-oriented program, the baseball part. And when they leave here, if they're part of it or they're associated with it somehow, they're proud of what we're doing. They're proud to wear the ram across their chest with the baseball underneath and understand that everybody has a part of it. And then the job's not done. It's not finished. And what I want ultimately is when I leave here, when I first took the job, I told myself, I'm going to leave this place better than I found it. So I could walk away today and say, hey, I did that. But when I leave here, I don't want it to be where the players that I've coached the last 14 years stop showing up and supporting. Like, we have a lot of alumni come back now that's played for me. And then we have a lot of the older guys like Bob Fowles been around, Mike Kerrigan from the 1990 team. Those guys been around. But then we're missing a lot because the coach isn't there. I want to be able to have this program be built where it's pride in the baseball program that I'm not there anymore, that the alumni will come in and help support and root on and teach the younger guys that, hey, we're Rams. And that's the beautiful thing about, like, Abe Mamonte, my assistant coach, who's played for me, got drafted from here, TJ Bergman, who's now with the Houston Astros as a coach, minor league system. They were in it when it wasn't good. They were in it when we got one pair of shorts and two T-shirts and no shed and no windscreen. They were in it. So they have more pride in to see what it's built on today. And the further we get away from that, the further these guys don't understand that. And then I want them to appreciate what this program's been through throughout the years. We're going on to Team 58, 58 teams next year. And I want them to understand that's Rams baseball. It's about the program. It's about bringing something to the table. It's not an individual. It's not Fernando Garza. It's not Brandon Caronta. It's not Abe Mamonte. It's not Bob File. It's everybody that played and put that Rams jersey on has built that program. And moving forward, that's what it needs to be.
Pat Horvath, thanks so much for coming in. This was great.
Yep. Appreciate it. Thank you.
And that will do it for this week's episode of One-on-One with Matt Leon, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. Want to thank Thomas Jefferson University head baseball coach Pat Horvath for coming in studio and being our guest this week. Now, if you like the show, if you listen on Apple Podcasts, do us a favor, leave us a rating and a review. You can follow the show on X at One-on-One Pod. You can follow me there as well at MattLeon1060. Thanks so much for listening, and be sure to check us out again next time when we bring you another conversation with someone you should know more about.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
With Ring cameras, you can protect your home from anywhere. You're at baggage claim, and you get motion alert. Check live view and see a guy looking in your car window. Luckily, you've got floodlight cam. So you press the siren button and let 105 decibels do the rest. Problem solved. Home protected. Bag on its way. With Ring, you can protect your home from anywhere. Learn more at Ring.com.